Well, we decided that there was a big new medium out there which involved CD-ROM. And this big new medium, CD-ROM, needed a definitive product. And the Seventh Guest seemed to fit into that. Needed something with power and passion and drama and story and animation and graphics and multimedia and sound overlays, and we were the people to do that.
We were chosen by God.
This week in your parents' basement, we're wandering through a haunted mansion and our memories as we play 1993's The Seventh Guest by Trilobite for the personal computer. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is the regular co-host that suffers from amnesia from time to time, but he doesn't remember it. It's Todd Brisket.
I remember doing something like this when I was a little girl.
And our other regular co-host, he loves to carve cursed toys for all the neighborhood children. It's Huell Hauser.
He was a drifter, moving from town to town, robbing a gas station here, a grocery store there, until one night.
Oh, yes.
Ellipsis.
Yes. Actual plot from this game. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. You can also join our Discord channel by going to ybbpodcast.com/Discord, where you can chat with all the sweet baby boys. And as always, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link. You can find it right on the YPB homepage, ypbpodcast.com. This week's game is The Seventh Guest. Released in 1993, The Seventh Guest came out 5 months before Myst and had a similar but smaller effect for the Windows PC market. In the game, you play as Ego, and you can't remember how you get to this haunted mansion with six other folks and why you're there. You have to unravel the mysteries. I only played this one a tiny bit as a youth. So, Todd, how'd you find this one? I believe you nominated it for coverage this week.
Ooh, yeah. I did nominate it. And the reason we are playing it is because it is the coming up on the 25th anniversary of The Seventh Guest. And yes. Also, I happen to have free copies I acquired over time on my Steam account and on my phone, either through bundles or something else. So I figured, hey, why not? Let's do it.
Let's pop that bad boy in.
Yeah, I already got it. Steve played it a little as a kid. I did not play this at all. I've only seen it in magazines and in the back of my my computer magazines advertisements and on the internet browsing around. But I never played this before. It's always intrigued me because as a youth grown up, I put many hours into the adventure games like King's Quest and so forth. And I never got to play this one because this is, as they say on the box, not recommended for people under 17 years old to play. Because this is, guys, this is scary, a scary game.
Not allowed.
Yes. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you take out the scariest part, which might be a face forming in soup, you know, it's just a collection of many puzzles, and it's a puzzle game. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Like it's a collection of puzzles, which
I would say this, the scariest part is what the cursor turns into when you can click a puzzle.
Oh yeah.
Which is a skull with a pulsating brain.
Yeah. It is scary, but once you get used to it, it's a little comforting sight to see.
Yeah. It's like an old friend.
Little Please skull go. With his eyeballs going left and right and a brain popping out.
Let's know you're going to have to think pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was supposed to be the killer app for CD-based games. That's what Bill Gates said in a direct quote. He said, hey, bros, check it out. This is the killer app on CDs. Mm-hmm. Because they usually, when games on PC came out around this era, they always came out on floppy disk or CD-ROM. And this one was one where they're like, no, we're exclusively CD-ROM because we have so much full motion video and high quality audio for you to consume.
High quality.
Yeah.
The highest quality video.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah, speaking of which, so this does feature full motion video of all the other six guests plus
like live live captured actors and actresses.
Yeah, plus mm-hmm. Stoff, the owner of the house.
Yes.
And something I was thinking as I was playing this game, and I did find later that they went for this, is that the video quality has got this like everybody looks like a ghost, even in the intro when they're alive, they look like ghosts. And they're like, hey, let's just make this into a ghost game.
Yeah, there's like 5 minutes of intro video of not dead people.
You show off that CD-ROM.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so the game's house has all the money around it, all the stress. When you get into the house, you are playing somebody. I don't think you find out your name until later, but you're playing as Ego in the first person perspective, and you navigate the house a la Myst or any other first person adventure game, and you happen upon puzzles. And you solve the puzzles, and that is the game. The story plays itself. As soon as you solve a puzzle, you'll see a little cutscene of most likely it'll be two people trying to kill each other. Because that's how I took the story, is that all these six people that came into the house previously to you, they all did these puzzles, but it made them go crazy, and they all started killing each other.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be the vague plot, where these six people were invited to the house under mysterious circumstances. But like, yeah, as you go through and solving the puzzles, you realize that I guess everyone just kind of went nuts for no reason,
right?
And then just started murdering everybody.
There was one lady that she looked into a mirror and she says, "I want to be young forever," or something like that, and she started turning
like, I
into
be
a
young
baby.
Again. Yeah. She turns into a baby at the end. It's a cool Machiavellian twist.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's like the Twilight Zone.
The monkey's paw. The monkey's guest, as they call it.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to be young again. She's like, oh no, that's too far. And then she's a baby.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
She should have been more clear. I want to be young again. But there is magic in this house. I would like to think that it's not really magical, and then she just hallucinated it, and then like started crawling around.
True.
And started sucking her thumb, and I'd be better. Yes, I'm here. Game. You see all of the guests enter the house one at a time. Mm-hmm. And those guests are Martine Burden, a former singer. Edward mm-hmm. and Eleanor Knox, a dissatisfied middle-aged couple. We all know what that means. Julia Heine.
They sleep in separate beds.
Yeah.
Heine, definitely.
I'll go with Julia Heine. A bank worker who reminisces of her youth. Mm. Brian Dutton, a fellow shop owner. Mm. And Hamilton Temple, a stage magician.
Yeah, it's the dude with like the Swami outfit.
Yeah, he's the Swami guy.
Very out of place.
Well, I mean, if this is like supposed to be olden times, like 1930s or so. Back then, mm-hmm. you know, Houdini, he put on the old Swami outfit, right?
Yes, I don't think so, but.
But yeah, those are the guests in the house, and their goal set out by Mr. Stoff, the owner of the premises, is to bring him the seventh guest.
Mm.
So the seventh guest we find out is actually a little boy that sneaks into the Stoff's castle house, his puzzle house. And I don't know how Stoff knew that some boy would sneak into his house, but he gives everybody the mission to bring that little boy to him.
I think he left a trail of candy outside his house, leading to the door.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That no, that's a good idea. That is a good idea.
Good idea to attract little children, I guess.
Todd's taking notes from Hansel Hewell over here.
I followed a trail of candy once. Didn't end well.
Yeah. I read the plot for this one since I never got that far into this game when I first played it. And I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like that Agatha Christie thing, 12 Little Indians, where like each of the guests kind of has like a dark secret or kind of something in their past that's kind of freaking them out. And they turn on one another.
A little bit.
And I think, Todd, you touched upon this. They're offered by staff, like riches or like their heart's desire if they bring the boy to him.
But my question is, if they all have weird dark pasts and will eventually turn on each other, why would he then make them all like join together on a mission to get him this boy? Like, why did he pick these six weirdos?
Yeah,
if his intention was to get the seventh guest was his main goal.
Well, he should have just gone and hired some local drunk to abduct children for him if that's what he wanted.
Well, it's like,
what's the guy's name from The Wizard? That everyone likes.
Oh yeah, that guy.
That bumbling bounty hunter.
Putnam.
Putnam.
They got Putnam on the case.
Yeah. Like another film that surely won many, many Hurleys in the year it was nominated, Suicide Squad, which is if you got a job you want done, don't send one awful person to do it. Send like seven of them or six of them.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. So
okay. So this is the Suicide Squad of the 1930s.
Exactly.
Okay.
Except I guess Hamilton Temple, the stage magician, he's the only one who's seemingly decent, except that he's a magician. So,
yeah, that means there's something off.
Yeah,
just right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this and like even knowing that, like do we know why Stoff wants the little boy, or is it just like we might think it is? And for the reasons he wants this little boy?
No, from what I understand is those dolls that he makes are from the corpses of children.
Oh.
Those are hot ticket items. The townsfolk love them.
That wasn't clear. I might have missed something along the way.
According to the old Wikipedias, he made like a deal with a demon.
In
order to get riches and to prolong his life. And part of that pact is he's gotta keep given the demon kids.
Okay. Because, yeah, in that opening movie, he is the drifter that I referred to. And he eventually just starts seeing visions of toys that he can make. So, like, he makes these toys and eventually gets rich off of them. But, like, these just, like, come to him in visions. He's like, oh, this will be a great toy. And then he makes them, and then people buy them, and he gets rich off of it. And creates this mystery mansion to torture people with. So
yeah,
a lot of unclear motivations behind this Stoff fellow.
Yes,
when it starts out, the story starts out. The first thing he does is he's a bum, a drifter walking the streets, and the first thing he does is just kill some woman.
It's true. It's in like 30 seconds in, he's just murdering someone for her purse.
And then I guess because. Maybe he's so evil that the devil seeks him out and says, hey, why don't you make this doll? You're so bad.
Is the devil that bartender?
Ooh.
This was not very clear.
Well, he is selling the devil's juice.
Oh, it's true. Makes men turn evil.
Oh.
So, yeah, he gets weird toy visions and then becomes rich. And his goal is to abduct children, I guess, for the devil.
Oh.
Pretty straightforward stuff, I mean.
Yeah, so we're at the point in the story where after you solve all these puzzles and make your way through the house, you're reliving the past. You find out you're reliving the past. and you find out, hey, that last puzzle.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for The Seventh Guest, a game in 1993 that you can just watch the video online. hey, you are that seventh guest. You are that kid, Tad. That
little
boy Tad.
Was you.
The little boy was you. You got caught. Stuff trapped you. You're reliving your past. But now as a force ghost, as yes. a force ghost reliving
just
your
like
past.
Everyone.
Yeah, you have the power to touch puzzles, I guess.
Yes. Very clear.
So you finally get to that last room in the attic. You're sitting there on Stoff's lap. He's laughing. He has you. And you solve that last puzzle, and that distracts Stoff. And he falls into the pit of hell.
Yeah, he eventually becomes a skeleton and gets swallowed into hell. It's very, very weird.
It's hard to find a place to finish.
That is the moral of the story. It's hard to find a place to finish.
It's hard to find a place to finish.
It's something that's plagued us all numerous times.
Mm.
Is there a clip of Tad that you could play?
No, I don't. Oh.
Oh,
grown adult Tad. I have a clip of grown adult Tad. If you've ever played The Seventh Guest, this is a sound. This is a sound clip you have heard probably thousands of times.
Which way should I go now? Which way should I go now? Which way should I go now?
You could hear that probably 30 times a puzzle, approximately.
Mm.
And it's such weird pronunciation. Like the emphasis is so.
Which way should I go now?
Go now.
Which way should I go now?
It's like they took different cuts and just mashed them together.
Yeah.
Which way should I go now?
It's like, well, we like the first half of this take and the second half of this other take.
Help me find my girlfriend.
That's another one of the kind of weird emphasis that they have on there.
Yeah, it's weird that Alfred Chicken is a character in The Seventh Guest.
It's hard to find a place to finish.
Game Boy.
That is Stealth.
So
yeah, Stealth openly mocks you as you try to solve his puzzles,
mm-hmm.
which is a great trope. I love that trope.
Oh, it is good. Yeah, I mean, and he does give kind of a hint on a few of them, like, "Oh, you the schools are going down now," or whatever he says.
He does say that.
The domes are going down.
Ooh, he shouldn't have done that. Ooh, that's the wrong way. He's a jerk. As you might think of a man who made a deal with the devil to sell toys to abduct children. He's kind of a dick.
Yeah. It's not. He's a real bad dude.
He's not just a regular old murderer.
Yeah. He's a supernatural murderer. But so Todd, when you played this, how'd you find those puzzles? Because I didn't actually get to play this. Just watched a run through of it, and they looked impossible.
Well, some of them are fairly easy. Like the first one most people come across is the cake puzzle, which is
yes.
The hint that they give is everybody gets an equal slice with all the same toppings on top of their
yeah.
cakes.
Exactly.
And so you have to, you know, select pieces in order to get everybody an equal size slice. That one you can kind of figure out after a few clicks.
I figured that one looked pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I figured that one after about three tries when I actually listened to what they're saying. It's like, oh, they're actually telling you what to do. But the one I had the most trouble with was the bishop chess puzzle. Where you have a row of like a 6x5 or 6x4 chessboard and four bishops on each side, and you have to swap the sides. And the bishops cannot be put in a place where they can be attacked by the other team's bishops.
Mm.
So you have to kind of rotate the pieces in a specific order to get them across each other to the other side. That's the one I spent 2 hours on that, working on that.
Oh my god!
And when I finished, and I solved it, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I got it done." because I didn't want to look up any lookups or, you know, walkthroughs, which order should I put these. I figured out myself.
Yeah.
When I finally did that, when the game zoomed out from the board as if it were going to play a cutscene, it didn't play any cutscene, and it just froze as if it were playing a cutscene, and I couldn't continue.
Oh,
so
no.
I just gave up.
That was the end game puzzle for Todd Brisky.
Yeah, that was the third puzzle, maybe fourth puzzle I did. I also did the can puzzle in the pantry where you have to spell words using the letter Y.
That looked insane.
Yeah, that one I did have to look up because it's just these random words that have Y's in them.
Because like there is like a weird like clue poem or something from what I saw, but it's not that. Well, it is that the puzzles are hard, first of all, but what another layer of difficulty is, it's not very clear what the goal even is. So like it's one thing to have to like swap letters in a certain order to get certain words, but they don't even like, there's no indication of what those words are even supposed to be. So you have to first figure out, well, not first, but eventually figure out what the sentence is even trying to be. And then at that point, you can try to even solve the thing.
So yeah, and I think it even, they made up a word.
Yeah.
That doesn't even exist.
It's like tristily or something.
Yeah.
It's just a word that doesn't exist. The difficulty of these puzzles looked like really crazy.
It's all over the map. Like the telescope puzzle is also one I did on my first try, just because make a word sentence out of these letters. And that's pretty straightforward. I did that one immediately.
Oh, okay. Jeez.
But the others look more difficult. Like I watched a playthrough the on the knight's puzzle, the chess knight's puzzle, where you have to move the knight pieces across each other. Mm-hmm. That one, it looked like it took the person playing like an hour just to solve that, and they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that's what
so
I mean.
So many clicks.
If you don't even know what the goal is, it takes even longer. Like it's ridiculous.
So they also have a card puzzle where you have to flip cards in order. They have a crypt puzzle, which is one of those classic kinds of puzzles where the crypt puzzle, and also a painting puzzle later on where you click on a piece or click on a section and it flips that one plus the ones next to it.
Yeah, so the there's like what 16 coffins or whatever?
Yeah.
Or 9, I guess. 9 probably.
Yeah.
And like they're either open or shut. So if you like shut one and the two next to it open, you shut another one and then the other ones, or if you open another one, shuts the rest. Like, so it's like switching out patterns and getting that down.
Yeah, classic puzzle.
Classic. It's a real classic.
They also have some of those sliding puzzles where you have to make the right image, slide all the pieces in place. Piano puzzle, which is like Simon. You have to repeat the song that they're playing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Knives puzzle, which you have to jump other knives to get knives off of the board.
Yeah, like the peg, like that peg.
Yeah,
thing
the peg game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the windows puzzle, which I didn't understand. I didn't really follow it, but you have to light up the windows.
Where you update your drivers, I think.
Yeah.
It's like picking the right one. Yeah, I saw that one at the end, and like there was a comment in the video that tried to explain it, and it looked, I had no idea what was going on, like that final puzzle with lighting up the windows. Because I didn't
follow that one either.
It was like a 2.5 hour video, and I was just skipping around a bit just to see like the variety and watch some of the weirdos try to kill each other. But yeah, that last one, that didn't make any sense at all. So like, yeah, I think half of the game, if you're playing it legitimately, it's just figuring out what the goal of the puzzle even is.
Right. They don't even give you that many hints. Like, no. Only on that cake one is one where the hint really told me what I should be doing.
Yeah, and that's pretty early on, so it's probably, they don't want to like shut you off completely right off the bat. Steve, did you play this at all?
I mostly relied on my past experience to...
Oh, that's right.
To do this, plus I watched a little bit of it, of the video. The thing is I just couldn't get myself psyched to play this because I knew it was one of them click 'em ups.
Mm-hmm.
Click 'em up walkathons.
Heavy click 'em.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately, this isn't in a mansion, but the mansion is not that big. There's just like four rooms on the bottom floor and like six rooms on the second floor. There's a basement, but it's got a maze, but it's not that big. You know, it's not as big as Myst, where you're going like teleporting to different islands.
Your standard maze basement.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. My mindset with these games is just like they're good for the time, but it's just tough for me to play them now.
Just watching it, I mean, it is a click 'em up where you have to click around to move.
Yeah,
and it moves so sluggishly. Just like even just like walking down the hallway, it seems
they did clean cleaned that up in the iPhone port that they made. Okay. It's much smoother and faster.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that's the one that crashed on me, and I couldn't continue.
Just turning to the left takes like 5 seconds. It seemed crazy sluggish on the original PC one.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. I also think it's, you know, if you're playing this game in 1993, which is, you know, that's 7 plus 18, 25 years ago at this point.
Yes, because we're on the 25th anniversary of this game.
Oh, funny how that works. Like, if you're playing this 25 years ago, you're like, oh, this is cool. This is, look at this.
You're like, hey, man, this is blowing my mind. What's going on? Man, there's a ghost. Whoa, man.
You can play games on CDs now. But, you know, that doesn't automatically mean it's better now. Like, I'd rather play, like Mario a million times more than this. Like, something older and simpler.
Yeah, I mean, it was a new frontier, you know. They're just trying out new stuff with these weird click 'em ups and FMVs and whatnot. So yeah, it's a new way to present like 25 different puzzles, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Putting a little weird mystical wrapper around it.
Yes,
not the wrapper mystical, but like a mystical encapsulation, a story.
No, he was hot a little bit after this game came out.
It took him a few more years.
Yeah.
Did inspire him.
Yes.
Did it now?
Yeah, he was playing this game like, whoa, this is a very mystical game. Whoa. I'll be mystical as my rap name.
Mystical.
I'm sure that's it. Just to touch on the old history of this one, Bill Gates called The Seventh Guest the new standard in interactive entertainment. Whoa. And it sold 927,000 copies from 1993 to 1999. It was well reviewed at the time, although some noted that the minimum system requirements were quite high.
Oh, would you like to know what those are? You continue.
I was hoping. I was hoping one of you would look it up. I'll just continue quick. a sequel, The 11th Hour, came out in 1995, but it wasn't as well reviewed and didn't sell as well. Both games are available on Steam and have been re-released various times.
So yeah, in the manual you have your minimum hardware requirements. So that is a 386 DX processor.
Oh,
which
boy.
I'm not sure what that even means. 2 megabyte. Go ahead.
Oh, I had a 386 back in the day.
Okay. It's like there isn't even like a megahertz listing. It's just 386 DX.
No, I think mine was something. It was in the 20s, I think, megahertz.
Yeah, well, the recommended is a 486, which is 20 megahertz.
More power.
It also wants 2 megabytes of RAM. Megabytes. A 16-bit video card with at least 512. Am I allowed to talk? With at least 512K of memory.
Dang, boy, that's a lot of memory.
And a hard drive with 10 megabytes of free space.
Mm.
Oh, and DOS 5.0 or higher.
Wow.
But it recommends 4 megabytes of RAM. That's the recommended. Not just the bare minimum. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, you ever think like our phones? That's like our phones are more powerful than when they sent the spaceman to the moon, right, man?
I think about that all the time. Almost every hour on the hour. I'd look up at the moon and think, man, my phone could have sent a man to space.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. But yeah, it's funny that the people complained that was too high requirements. It's good stuff. It's funny stuff. Think about the past, man. It's crazy. So yeah.
Good time.
Yeah, as I was watching this, I was thinking this is sort of a precursor to Myst, which was mentioned, but I didn't realize they came out so close to each other. So they were obviously in development pretty much at the same time, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, Myst was smart to have pre-rendered backgrounds, I guess, which makes it a lot less sluggish. You could like click around a lot faster because you're just going frame by frame. But like the rendering of the rooms in this one just made it so slow.
Yeah, and both of these games were delayed many times. Like that was one of the notes on the on the Wikipedia page for the Seventh Guest, that it had to be delayed several times.
I had to record all those great actors to buy more time for that.
So yeah. Speaking of regular segments, since you mentioned the manual fuel, what were your thoughts on this one?
Boy, so knowing that this is a PC manual from the early 90s, I did not get my hopes up, and my hopes were met because this is a bad manual. I'd say at least 75% of it is troubleshooting and like how to install the game, like that kind of stuff.
How to select your sound card?
Yeah, like setting sound, like what happens if I can't hear the first video? And just like hardware not found, like all that crap. It has a listing of the soundtrack album, like the different tracks for some reason. I guess because
music by the Fat Man.
The Fat Man, yeah, that is in the credits. So I guess a fun thing about old PC games, you could just pop them into a CD player and just play the music.
It does have you know, it's heavy MIDI tracked video game, but all those tunes are kind of jaunty and they pretty catchy for being you know, MIDI based tunes. But there's also two real songs on it with actual singers. Opening credits and the ending credits.
I remember the closing credits has it's kind of like a weird song. It's like a jaunty like Irish pub tune, which is strange. But this is a bad manual. I mean, I wish it went into the story. I feel like there's a lot to explain there, and I was hoping the story that would be in the manual here, but it's mostly just controls and like a few hints about what to look for puzzles and how to load and save the game. So this is getting a paltry 1.5 out of 5.
Ooh, Mario 2s. Wow.
So this is just half a Mario 2 better than a game that didn't even have a manual. So that lets you know. Which was last week's Home Improvement Power Tool Pursuit, which got 1. So there is a thing we should do next.
Oh, okay.
Which I am prepared for.
Yes, always. Todd, how many DuckTales for the Seventh Guest?
Ooh.
Not the guest.
Oh, not the guest himself.
Okay, not the little boy.
Which is me, because I am him.
You are a little boy.
I am a little boy.
I remember doing something like this when I was a little girl.
Exactly.
So, as we all know, the DuckTale scale factors in two primary factors, those being nostalgia and replayability. Seeing that replayability, I'm going to put this pretty low. Like, once you figure out the puzzles and you've gone through it once, the story doesn't draw you in. You don't need to see the story again. Replayability, it's not there. Sorry, Trilobite. No replayability. Nostalgia. I have a tiny bit of nostalgia. I did not play this as a kid, but I've always seen it in magazines, seen it on internet advertisements, and as an adventure game fan, I've always wanted to play it. So I have a tiny bit of nostalgia for it, having not played it. That all being said, this one, I'm going to clock it in at a 0.31 DuckTales.
Ah!
Okay.
Wow.
Yes!
Did you get it?
Our long national nightmare.
It finally happened.
He did indeed guess 0.31.
Wow.
Nice.
What do we do? We're ending the show, right? That's what happens?
Yeah. It's all over.
It's all over, man.
Yep.
Yes. It all fell into place. Man, when you started, I thought 0.31, the golden number.
Yeah.
I thought, as you were talking, I thought I might have gone too high. Because I thought the replayability you would have thought was a little higher, but
no, it's actually a decent game. The decentness of it brought it up a little bit.
Wow, this is the greatest day of my life.
Oh, the sheer joy that you reacted with was incredible.
I was joyous and then speechless.
Number one, Eagles winning the Super Bowl. Number two, guessing the DuckTales. Number three, I don't know, maybe the birth of your first child or something like that.
Oh, well, that'll never happen. So probably that time I won a Warhammer tournament.
champions, look at all your rings.
Just gold. My hands are so heavy.
Got three. Just two more.
I'll count the 08 World Series.
Okay, you're up to four.
I'm up to four. Guessing the DuckTales scale.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's something you did yourself. That's one for
the thumb.
Yeah.
That's a big ring.
Yeah. You didn't need Fats Howard helping you.
Mm-mm. F you,
wow,
Nick Foles.
Oh, God. You know, I don't think we're going to top that for the seventh guess, but just in case, Todd, I understand you had one more segment before we moved on.
Sure. I think we all agree this is an okay game. For the time, it was pretty good, but it's okay now, and it's getting worse as it ages. But I do have three reasons why.
Oh, my.
Seventh guest for the PC is the most best game of all time.
You okay?
First one comes from... It's called Live at the Haunted House by Feast of Fire on December 2012, or 2002, sorry. This game was an addicting challenge. Once I started, I was obsessed at getting to the very end. I did all the puzzles by myself, but it is very easy to go online and get the answers from a number of websites. The game that has me the most obsessed is Microscope One. It still gets the better of me every time I play it. But anyway, this game gave me hours of enjoyment, and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to play Live at the Haunted House. 5 stars.
Ooh. Live at the Haunted House. Very nice.
Yeah. The next one is titled Really Cool by Sora Squall, also written in 2002. I remember we had this game. It must have been the old version, back when I was in first to third grade, or about 7 to 5 years ago. It had a lot of puzzles, and the last one was the hardest. It was a really long game, kind of like King's Quest, in how it took days to weeks to months to complete. I do remember that it was a great game, though. I loved it. I definitely wish I could play it again. 5 stars.
So they can't play it again?
Cannot play it again. Sorry.
Impossible.
And keeping on that theme, this next review is titled Wish I Could Play It Again. And it's by Smoke It Topaz. Smoke It Topaz.
Okay.
This was written in 2006. This was one of the first computer games I played. My whole family ended up playing it, and we all loved it. All these years later, it remains the standard by which all other games we buy are measured, and usually fail. I will skip the storyline and puzzle specifics, as they have been pretty much covered in other reviews. Puzzles are plentiful, and the ability to roam around the mansion is a lot of fun, especially when you find the secret passageways. Mm-hmm. There's a hint book you can access twice for each puzzle if you really hate one of them or get stuck. The rooms are fun, and the voices are creepalicious. I wish I could play it today. 5 stars.
Nice.
And I was thinking about this, reading these reviews, people that wish they could play it again, if only they knew. It's out on iPhone for them to pick up today. They could play it right now. These reviews were written...
Look, man, not everyone can afford one of those fancy smartphones. I
think you that's true.
You need to realize the the situation.
I mean, according to these reviews, these people are about 40 years old by now, 30 to 40 years old, because these... I was thinking about, this was written in 2002. That it was written closer to when the game was released than it is now real time.
Right. Huh. Mm-hmm. These old geezers need to get on top of it.
They need to update their reviews and say, hey, I saw this was on iPhone and I picked it up. And I played it again. And I was disappointed.
And
3 stars.
No. You can't go back on a review like that.
No.
3 stars.
Yep. Ah, good times. Well, on that note, was there anything else you wanted to say about this one, Heel?
Going into this, I thought I had played it before at one of my mom's friends' houses when I was younger. But looking through it, I think I played the 11th hour.
Ah,
so close.
And because nothing looked familiar, and then when I watched the video of the 11th hour, none of that looked familiar either, so I don't know what I played. pretty sure it was 11th hour.
You played the 420 minute, man.
Hey, man.
There are a lot of these kind of games, like ones missed out, like the walk 'em ups, and also the
clickeroonies.
Like, yeah, the clickeroonies where you'd have like acting cuts spliced in.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Horde, but not exactly like that. But
only not as good.
Like the Shade. The Daedalus encounter with Tia Correa.
We still haven't played that.
I just remember being hyped constantly, like D2 and like these other games that were always marketed for like the 3DO and the CDI. And it's like, oh, no wonder those systems failed.
Yeah, because these are bad games.
Yeah. Nobody wants to watch a weird movie on their PlayStation game, on their video game console.
Exactly. Save that for Final Fantasy.
In Final Fantasy, you just watch movies for a little bit of it. Not like, it's not more than half the gameplay.
Right.
Todd, anything else you wanted to say about this one?
No. I think we covered pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a puzzle game. I mean, there's so many puzzles on your iPhone that you could play instead of this one. Go crush some candies. Crush some candies while you watch the cutscenes of this thing on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, just head to YouTube, watch like 10 minutes of it for the camp. That's about that's about all you need.
Well, on that note, let's move right along to the email portion of the show. Todd, did you receive any emails?
You know what? I did.
Oh.
Got an email. And they write, "Dear YPB gentlemen, my 13-year-old son got a PS4 for Christmas. My 15-year-old daughter received a new bed of equal value. My daughter has never been very interested in video games until about a month ago. We have a game room, so I asked my son if he would leave the PS4 there for use by family, friends, etc. He agreed. But now I am experiencing arguments between the two kids regarding video game playtime. How can I convince my kids to share their PS4? Do you have any suggestions as to how I can handle this in a productive way. I am seeking a peaceful and fair approach to solving this problem. Thanks so much, John from Milwaukee.
Well, I mean, the obvious solution jumps out to me, like, as soon as you read that. So, any time spent that the daughter plays the PlayStation 4, the son gets to sleep in her bed for.
Ooh, equal trade.
Yeah. So if she plays like 2 hours, like he can sleep for 2 hours in the new bed. Problem solved.
Hmm. My suggestion was going to be just sell the PS4 and then just buy 2 PS3s.
Oh.
Ah. Yeah.
Huh. Split the baby.
Okay. Or 2 Game Boys.
Tear that baby in half.
Oh, you could buy like 5 Game Boys probably for that price.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
So,
what do you think, Alfred?
Game Boy.
There we go.
Yeah. He wants to. So I think we helped that person. Todd, did you have an answer for him?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, get like a turn-based game, strategy game, and they can just pass the controller off to each other.
Okay. Mm.
I mean, get some, they made Civilization on PlayStations or something like it. Just toss that controller around.
Yeah.
Or like he can take the directional control half of the controller and she can take the action button half. And then
yeah, man, it's got 2 sticks on there. They got 2 sticks.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they got XCOM. XCOM is on PS4.
Hell yeah!
So it's a good game for kids too. So
yeah, blast those aliens in the head.
Yeah, prepare them for the alien invasion. Well, Huel, did you get any mails this week?
I did receive an email. This is an email I will read right now.
Okay.
Dear YPB, did I do that? Yes, I did do that, which is listen to last week's episode on home improvement. While it sounded fun, it made me wish my show had a video game. Sure, I could invent a machine to make myself cool, or a robot version of myself, but I've never been in a video game. That would have been great. If you could put me in any video game, what would it be? Signed, Urkel. P.S. P.S. Got any cheese?
I think that's actually got any cheese.
Well, I mean, I'm not as skilled at reading emails in the voice of the writer as you are, Todd, so I'm sorry.
I mean, just
a side tangent, like many people have called me over the years the master of voice and speaking.
Oh, did they?
Yes, many people.
Voices and speaking. Yes,
and speaking. Yes.
So yeah, if you could put Urkel in any video game, what would it be?
Hmm. That's a tough one because he has skills that can apply to any situation.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if there's any games where you invent things? Probably not, because that sounds boring.
I was going to say I would just have him be the enemy in Sanix.
Oh.
Instead of Dr. Robotnik.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and
that's all a little robot.
And also, hey, another connection. Jaleel White was the voice of Sonic in Sonic Adventures.
Oh, my God! Full circle. He faces
he really?
Himself. Yeah, I remember that now.
Wow.
Oh, man. The cartoon.
Yeah. Sega sparing no expense in the casting of that show.
Of course.
Well,
that's a great pick. Yeah, I was thinking Smash Brothers. Think of all the crazy moves that Urkel could do.
Yeah. He can have like a transformation. You know how Zelda turns into Sheik? He could turn into Stefan.
Or how...
When he turned into Bruce Lee.
Oh, God. Don't bring
super
up.
Racist.
Super racist. But, or he'd be like Ash when like, as he like throws out little Pokeballs with both Pokemans that fight for him. He could have like Robo Urkel fight for him and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't be bad. Urkel.
Yeah. They should just make just one game of the of like the TGIF lineup. Just shove all four of them into weird platforming games.
Or a fighter.
Yeah. Oh, fighter would be even better. Get your step and stab.
Well, it's more than four because they changed the lineup.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's what you do. You combine TGIF and SNCC. Make them all one game.
Ooh. I don't know. I feel like the Nickelodeon shows were separate. Like those had a different feel to
them. But that could be the conflict. That they fight each other.
That's the beef.
Yeah. That's the beef.
I
control the weekend of 8-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Todd, did you pick one?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I guess he would fit in as kind of like a person in Earthbound, which you can pick up and recruit for your party.
Mm, that's pretty good. That game was full of nerds.
Jeff? Yeah.
Not bad.
Well, I received one mail this week. Hello, guys. I'm sure that many people have written into your show to say how much they love it, but few actually have technical statistics to back that up. It's only recently that I've discovered your podcast, and already, looking at the listening hours, I've listened for a total of 2 days and 4 hours of your voices.
Ooh.
I've been randomly choosing different episodes to listen to, and even if I didn't play the game that a particular episode is talking about, I find your analysis funny. I'm not sure if you've already covered this game, but one of my childhood favorites was Super Mario Kart on SNES. Based on a GamePro tip, I always used Koopa Troopa and my friend used Toad, because they apparently had the best steering abilities. Who was your favorite Mario Kart racer? Yours truly, Dante.
Oh my.
Oh, great ask.
A question we've never had.
Never came up before.
I'm glad he wrote in. Dante.
A good ask.
Dante. Thank you.
Yes.
My favorite part was when you said you like listening to us. Because that always blows my mind.
The fact that it's us and not just Huel?
No, just that anyone would listen.
Oh, okay.
But well, yeah, he failed to mention which host was his favorite. So that's my only critique of that email.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we're not able to update the charts on this one to keep the rankings up to date.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's a real shame.
Well, you could answer them anyway, though.
Oh, I will. I would have to go with Wario because he's loud and a jerk.
Ah,
well, yeah. Wario was not in Super Mario Kart, though.
Did he say Super?
Yeah, he did say Super.
Oh, Super Mario Kart. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Our favorite Super Mario Kart racer?
Well,
you know, here's mine. You know, I've said this all the time ever since I was a kid, and my answer has never changed. Mm. My answer has always been Bowser.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to...
He's a large turtle. I don't like turtles.
Is he a turtle? I guess so. That's always been a point of contention. I thought he was more of a... He's like a turtle dinosaur. But anyway, I was going to say Bowser because he's the closest equivalent to Wario.
Yeah, they have the same style.
Right.
And it's not even... Donkey Kong's not a racer in that first one, is he? It's like Donkey Kong Jr., isn't it?
Yes, it's DK Jr. It's not actually... I mean, it's always been DK Jr. in every kart racer.
Has
the original
it?
Donkey Kong died long ago.
We didn't die. Oh. He's just old. I mean, we discussed
turned into Cranky Kong.
We discussed this in Donkey Kong Country. Yeah, Cranky Kong is the original Donkey Kong that fought Jumpman and threw barrels at him.
Mm-hmm.
Which blew my mind when I read the manual.
Yeah. But Mario Kart came out before he had his reboot in Donkey Kong Country, so he's still like an ape. He looks like an ape wearing a big diaper in Mario Kart.
Yeah, because he's old. He's got that.
Yeah.
Got that diaper. But I guess if he's, I don't know. I'm already confused.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking now, and actually, it is a singlet. It's like a tank top.
Oh, it's even weirder.
It's a jumper.
Let those pits breathe.
Gotta leave my arms free. Gotta leave my arms free for steering that cart. Yeah.
Oh, and my favorite, as I've always answered, is Mario.
Okay.
So, and that's how I say it too, Mario.
Every time.
Yes, every time.
I will let you know, Dante, that we did cover Mario Kart 64 and Super Mario Kart in episode 41.
Ooh, was that a combined one? It's been so
long.
Yeah,
we kind of did. We dabbled in both.
As many people say, and we hear it on the streets all the time, we're so prolific, it's hard to keep track of everything we've done.
We squirt episodes out at a constant rate. That was from February 8th, 2016.
Yeah.
Over 2 years ago. Yes. Fatty McF was a guest.
Yeah. Yeah. And
a true friend of the show.
Yeah, and I believe clips of that ended up in the first clip show. We had a little bit of Fats in there. So,
yeah, mostly her trying to connect over Skype, that kind of thing.
Probably. That's the fresh IP I like to share in the clip shows.
Is that IP? I'm not sure.
They're gonna make a movie series out of people trying to connect to Skype.
Yeah, I'm working on a pitch right now where it's just, you know, a writer struggling to find a wireless access point to connect to, and he can't connect to his conference call.
Yeah, it's like a Fincher film.
Yeah, it's a thriller. That's what it is.
Moody and blue mm-hmm. color shifted.
Oh yeah, yeah. A lot of shaky cam. More shaky cam than steady cam in this one. So, let's move right along to the new news portion of the show. Only one quick item this week. Puma is doing a Sega Sanic shoe.
Oh, Puma the shoe.
Puma's doing a Sanic shoe.
Puma Sanic shoe.
Puma. It's coming out June 2018. There's a trailer on the internet.
2019, did you say? Or 18?
No, June 2018.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Does it make you go faster?
I guess it does. It makes you go faster than just having bare feet, sure.
Well, not according to some.
Nah, those people are weirdos.
Those people are freaks.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I hope, I'm sure, is it white with red highlights?
It does look like, they do look a little spiffy, but the thing is, they're pixelated right now. Because one, it's a secret till they come out, apparently. And two, I think the idea is, it's going so fast, we can't even show you what they look like. But it does seem like they have a red sole and a white kind of heel on the bottom. And then the most of the shoe is blue, though.
I guess because Sonic.
I don't think that's accurate to Sonic shoes.
That's what I was thinking. Like, they should be white with the red fronts, red toe, like a shell top.
Yes. Sonic shoes are kind of, I think they're just red with white bottoms. Mm-hmm. But I think the shoe is trying to emulate, like, what does Sonic's leg look like? So,
I get, or like if you skinned Sonic and
yeah, what if you stuck your foot inside Sonic's mouth and made that into a shoe,
and then that was what you walked around on?
It does kind of look like that.
Like a snakeskin boot, only Sonic.
Yeah. But yeah. Also, going to the Puma website, I didn't realize they have like Rihanna has a shoe. I didn't I didn't realize that.
That's not surprising.
Oh, yeah, the great singer Rihanna, yeah.
The great runner Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
Rihanna. Yeah, Rihanna. She's known for her onstage running.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lots of movement.
And Selena Gomez.
Another famous runner.
Mm-hmm. And The Weeknd.
Makes sense.
I mean, I wear sneakers on The Weeknd, yeah. Wear my loafers during the week.
And Cara Delevingne.
And you're just making words up.
And then 10th on this list is Usain Bolt.
Right, exactly.
and Julian Edelman, actual athletes.
The people least associated with running and going fast.
Mm-hmm. Yes. and Ricky Fowler. Isn't Ricky Fowler a NASCAR driver?
I think he's a baseball player.
Oh, wait. I think he's a golfer. They brought me to their golf site. Never mind.
Sounds like Ricky Fowler gets around.
Yeah. Ricky Fowler, 8th in the PGA Tour. Well,
American
he's not
professional
Tiger.
Golfer.
It's not Tiger Woods. That's all I know.
He is sponsored by Puma.
Puma.
Puma shoes.
Puma Man, what a movie. That's a good flick.
Puma Man.
Prince
Puma, good wrestler.
Oh yes. All right, let's move right along here. Todd, did you get any asks this week?
Yeah, we have somebody that needs our help, so let us ask the Sweet Boys. So send in all your life questions to parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and we will keep question anonymous and help you out. Unless otherwise requested, we will keep it anonymous. Okay. This one is called from Anonymous and the email is titled, "Can celebrities date their fans?"
Oh no.
And they ask, "My sister loves the TV show about Waco. She hopes to get on the show. Her dream is to be an actress. She has a crush on the guy who plays David. She said he's so hot, she don't know who he is. She's never heard of him, but already she's in love with him. She watches it every week. She said she looks exactly like him. She really hopes to get on the show. If she does, she's going to ask him out, but she's kind of shy, especially around guys, and especially if they're famous. She's worried that he might be married or have a girlfriend and kids. He's 10 years older than her. I've never heard of him either. She said she hopes he'll ask her out. She's too scared to ask him. If she gets on the show, I don't think she will, but she's trying. Can celebrities date and marry their fans? She wants to know how she can ask him without being so shy."
Huh. Okay.
That's a very good ask.
Yeah, I mean, it's... We're in the day and age where celebrities can directly talk to people through social media and whatnot. And we've already got all those stories of celebrities going to prom. So, I mean, the obvious next step is getting the bone on. So I think if she just harasses him through social media, then he's sure to just say yes eventually, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. If I mean, nowadays you got Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to get on the same program and be have a speaking line to date a celebrity anymore.
You don't have to become an actress and then be hired onto the show. Mm-hmm. So my next question, unless you guys had other suggestions.
Well, I just wanted to pipe in that if she's talking about David Koresh on the show, as played by Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say.
Yeah, the TV show Waco, yeah. The guy who plays David, yeah.
Taylor Kitsch has been in a ton of things.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
I mean, if he's in so much stuff, she can get on any one of those things he's on because he's on so much.
Mm-hmm. But it's like she claims he's he's just this nobody actor, but I mean, come on, just look at his resume.
Yeah.
Do some research before you want to date somebody. I mean, do the just the bare minimum of cyber stalking, and then you could find out some common interests, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like True Detective season 2. What everyone's talking about.
Yeah, he played the weird highway cop.
Yeah, the random white guy.
Yeah.
That wasn't Vince Vaughn.
And of course he was what's that movie that flopped really badly?
John Carter.
Yeah, John Carter.
Oh, and he was old Johnny Carter?
He is Johnny Carter.
Ah.
Yeah.
And Battleship. All the hits.
Battleship.
All the hits starring Taylor Kitsch.
Two big losses for him that year.
Well, maybe to you. You just got to listen to the director's commentary. Explains everything.
By the way, I did find a list of Ranker has a list of 24 celebrities who married their fans.
Oh.
But this is, I don't know. Most of these are kind of like iffy. Like Matt Damon met his wife Luciana Bozan Barroso when he stopped into a bar where she worked during a break from filming Stuck on You.
Bozan Barroso.
Another classic film, Stuck on You.
Oh, yeah, one of his greatest works.
But I'd say, you know, just running into someone at a bar, and that's a little different than what our writer is proposing.
Yeah. So, are any of these stories, they became an actor just to get on the show that they're on, and then they became a couple?
Not really. I think the closest one that qualifies
the clearest path
is Ruben Stoddard.
Oh, God.
Met his first wife, Sarada Zuri McCants, in Walmart when he was signing CDs.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, so that's clearly like, oh, she was a fan. Because what if this is, Christian Bale met his wife when she was working as an assistant for Winona Ryder.
Hmm.
Which, I don't think that counts as being a fan of Christian Bale.
It's a prestigious position, so.
Yeah.
That definitely doesn't count. Not just anyone can get that job.
Yeah. They also still have Katie Holmes and Tom Cruise on this list, so that's, I don't know if I'd consider that a win.
Well, the weird part is that he counts as the fan.
He loves Dawson Creek.
Loved
yeah.
it.
Mm. Cameraman Danny Motor was such a fan of Julia Roberts' work on the set of The Mexican that he married her in 2013.
They're all meeting. Oh, they're all meeting their significant others on like their worst projects. Stuck so on you.
They're so distracted by all the yeah. love that they have.
It becomes
they can't put in a good role.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Reese Witherspoon married her talent agent.
I guess I gotta become a talent agent.
So, oh, Adam Sandler's wife, Jackie Titan, was a fan of his work long before she was cast in a bit part in Big Daddy.
Hmm.
Oh, so that's, I mean, she did it. She got a role in the movie, and
that's the one.
Married her idol.
That's the path.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible, writer. Live your dream. Although looking at it, it looks like Waco was a mini series, so I don't think
might not be a season
that's
2.
That's the one that you're gonna be on. So just stalk his IMDb page and see what he's gonna be in next.
Yeah. Oh boy, Corey Feldman's wife Susie said, "I knew I would marry Corey ever since I saw Stand By Me."
Oh God.
Mm. Hmm.
Well, he always makes good decisions, so that makes sense.
I remember doing something like this when I was a little girl.
Precisely.
Good times. Do we have that person? Maybe, you know what she should do?
Kind of.
She should become friends with Supergirl because she's on that show.
Okay.
On Waco. So Supergirl could hook her up.
Or I will become an actor on Waco.
Ah, yeah.
And date Supergirl.
Yeah. And then you can introduce get a bit part for the writer on Waco once you get the right. credibility on there on the set.
And I'll introduce them to Anonymous and sparks will fly. So yeah, let me try it first and I'll get back to you.
Well, sounds like a plan. Well, on that note, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to say before we signed off?
Yeah. Everyone loved his unique toys.
Creepy, but true. Line of dialogue. Oh, I had one more fan who married their celebrity celebrity crush. Amy Railsback was reportedly a fan of a little show called Breaking Bonaducci before she married Danny Bonaducci.
Oh, no. Oh, those, man.
Those dark times.
Huge fan.
Yeah.
One more thing real quick.
It's hard to find a place to finish.
That's what all those fans said before they finally met their match.
Yeah. Huel, was there anything else you wanted to say before we signed off here?
We got another example of sage life advice from the manual.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are looking out from within, you cannot see yourself, but your inner spirit has a voice. Listen to it.
Oh.
Let's keep that in mind.
That's not actually awful advice. I guess.
No.
Well, on that note, next week, we're going to be playing a game that EGM magazine gave their first 10 rating ever. So, this very well-known game is what we're playing. And here's a sniffer that I'm sure everyone recalls from their youth.
King of the segue.
Master of segues, yeah.
Oh, that was good.
So you forgot what exactly the magazine
a little bit. I also was trying to remember what the hell the game was called.
Right. Well, we don't want to tell people. It's only a snifferoo.
Yeah, and then I realized that while I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, that doesn't matter.
You had to interrupt yourself. Interrupt yourself. Yeah,
that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what that son of a bitch is called. So.
The game that EGM called and gave a perfect score.
Oh.
And here is a snifferoo from that game that EGM had.
EGM reviewer played it. He put it in his ports. And he played it and gave it a 10 out of 10. And it was their first one.
Oh, my God.